Republicans didn't lose this seat because of low turnout from Republicans. Democrats didn't win this seat because of high turnout from Democrats. Democrats mostly won this seat because a large number of independent voters, almost all the independent voters, and some of the Republican voters who voted for the Democrat, Taylor Wimette.
Hey guys, welcome to a brand new episode of Yolitics here. This has been a wild week for Texas Democrats. Mm-hmm. It's been their, I would say arguably their best week in 20 years since mm-hmm. they took over Dallas County. Democrats in Texas are a demoralized group.
Yeah, they haven't had a lot to celebrate.
It's fair to say, you know, that they haven't had a lot to celebrate. But wow, what happened in State Senate District number 9 in Tarrant County?
Yeah.
Kelly Hancock's seat, you know, he moved up to comptroller, acting comptroller now, solid red seat. And how in the world did a Democrat win that in a special election?
First time a Democrat has won in that area in almost 50 years, which is astounding when you think about it. It's the remaining, I think, 11 months of Kelly Hancock's term, sure. since he's now the acting head of the comptroller's office. And so Bud Kennedy with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, I think, put it really great. He said it means everything and it means nothing. And we're going to get into both sides.
What does that mean then?
We'll get into both sides of that. I mean, as it stands right now, he won, but he's not actually going to serve in the legislature unless he wins again, because Texas has every other year legislatures. And so he still has to win another election to actually get to Austin.
So he might not actually.
The same opponent.
Yeah, I mean, he can technically go to Austin. He may not just,
right.
you know, he won't be there for the actual session unless he wins in November. So that's what we're going to talk about here. We're going to have the state senator elect also on this episode here in a moment. But first, let's bring in Ross Hunt from Hunt Research, a GOP related firm. You do a lot of Republican work here. And Ross, you did something that everyone has been wanting to do, and that is take these numbers apart. What in the world do they mean? You did that. What's the top takeaway for you?
Yeah, the main takeaway is that this election is a huge warning bell for Texas Republicans and Republicans around the country, but maybe not for exactly the reason people think. So a lot of people are talking about this election in terms of turnout on both the left and the right. On the left, you have, as you mentioned, Democrats celebrating their first win in a long time and arguing that the surge of blue turnout in this seat that they say happened means that they could duplicate that around the state and around the country, and they could sweep any Trump plus 17 seats. So that's the Democrats' argument. On the right, we have Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick saying if Republicans do not turn out this fall, we could see this happen elsewhere. And what I found when I dug into the numbers to figure out who was voting and how that matched up with how the vote broke down was that while turnout was a significant factor, and it's very important, Republicans didn't lose this seat because of low turnout from Republicans. Democrats didn't win this seat because of high turnout from Democrats. Democrats mostly won this seat because a large number of independent voters, almost all the independent voters, and some of the Republican voters who voted for the Democrat, Taylor Wimette. And that is the big warning sign we see here, is that we see even some of the Republican base and a lot of the independent voters choosing the Democrat in this race.
And every Democrat now, you know, wants to replicate what happened here. And I'm curious, was something simpler at play here? Did Taylor Wimette have the right message? Did Lee Wamsgon have the wrong message? Was this a candidate issue? Or do you think, you know, this is more reflective of what we're seeing on the national level with the Trump administration?
It's a great question, Jason. I mean, you've got a dramatic event here where you had an election where the Democrat Taylor Wimette won with 57% of the vote, even though 50% of those who turned out were Republicans and only 35% were Democrats. So you have, in other words, a 15 point advantage for the Republicans in terms of who voted. And yet the Democrat wins by 14 points. So obviously the Democrats are really excited about that, about the idea of replicating that. And many people have said this is a sign This is a sign of a national pushback against Trump. This is something which is sweeping across the country. I actually think the truth is closer to what you just said, Jason, which is that there is something very sort of specific to a district going on here. We have in Senate District 9, a district that is 51% made up of the city of Fort Worth in Tarrant County. And it's largely working class and middle class district. And yet the two Republican candidates that were put forward in the first round in November and the main candidate we had in this runoff were from Southlake, a small, wealthy suburb that makes up just 4% of votes at the northeastern corner of the district. Meanwhile, on the Democratic side, the nominee that the Democrats put forward is someone who, at least if you look at him in his advertising, is talking about affordability. He's talking about lowering property taxes. He's a union guy. He looks, honestly, a little more like a Trump candidate than perhaps his opponent did.
Totally.
In the special election. So this goes to the question of whether this is generalizable, right? So what can we learn from this across the country? I think this election cannot be interpreted as sort of a rejection of necessarily Trump or Republicans simply, but it is a warning for Republicans that in this midterm election environment, if we don't put up candidates who very closely match the district and are in tune with the district, we can see dramatically negative results down ballot.
Yeah, and the Republican in this case, we were talking about Bug Kennedy a moment ago. He was pointing out that, she and her Patriot Mobile action pack spent a bunch of money on school board elections to stack those boards with church conservative trustees. Superintendents parted ways. But in local elections last May, those candidates and others who were backed by, that similar movement went 0-for-12. So a lot of folks may have still had a bad taste in their mouths from what happened with the school districts there. And that might have crippled that Republican candidate a little bit. Do you see some of that at play here as well? Because this is the candidate that Republicans are going to be fielding again in November in this same race.
We did see a dramatic drop off from Republican vote share in the first round to the second round of the election. So again, this was a two round election where we had a November election and then we had this January runoff. There were two Republican candidates in the first round. In the first round, their votes added up to about 52%. Now that is still far below what one would expect from the district, but it was much more in line with what polling and modeling suggested. And in this round, we had a 14-point deficit for the Republican. That suggests that something more dramatic and local is at play. Now, the school districts is an interesting sort of local case. I agree that all politics is local, and especially, as President Trump himself said, commenting on this election, if I'm out of the ballot, anything can happen. And it's maybe a slightly self-aggrandizing way of putting it, but I don't think it's wrong. I think in these midterm elections, without the president pushing turnout can drop off precipitously. Now, we didn't actually see a massive drop off in turnout in any of the school districts associated with this measure. We didn't see like high turnout of people who might dislike Mrs. Wamsgans in Keller ISD, for instance. What we did actually see is turnout cratering in Southlake, which is the hometown for both Wamsgans and her previous opponent, John Huffman. And we also saw dramatic movements, negative movements for Republicans in terms of both turnout and vote share in Southlake, and then also in the more affluent areas of the city of Fort Worth. And so what I think you're seeing here is it does have something to do perhaps with school board, but I think it more just has to do with Republican and independent voters looking at the sort of candidate who's been put up and saying, is this my kind of candidate?
So Ramette, the Democratic candidate here, the senator elect in this case, won by about 15 points. This was a district that President Trump carried in 2024 by 17 points.
That's right.
That is a huge swing when you start talking about a 32-point swing there. This was a weird election. End of January, we'd had bad winter weather. A lot of people have been pointing that out. And they say, the turnout obviously was low. It was a runoff. He had already won the first round, though, as well. What do you see in November? Is this something that Republicans are really going to have to worry about? Are they going to have to pour in more money, more resources, more endorsements? I mean, this Republican candidate had the endorsement of the president, top state leadership. Right. She outraised the Democratic opponent by, you know, five times what he had raised. And I guess that also says that you can have all the money in the world. It doesn't mean you're going to win. But what do you see in November?
Yeah, you could certainly have all the money in the world and not win. I want to double click on the issue of turnout. So, you know, the question of does this bode turn? What does this bode for turnout in the fall? Again, the Democrats have been celebrating turnout in this election quite a bit, but I think they don't really have a great reason to celebrate. And when I crunched the numbers, I found that just barely a quarter of the Democratic base turned out for this election. So 25.41% of the Dem base turned out. 22.2% of the GOP base turned out. So really there wasn't a massive, and remember, this is with James Tallarico and Jasmine Crockett, the U.S. Senate candidates, and every prominent Democratic candidate around the state, just urging their supporters to turn out, like this is the most important election in the world. So considering this is a midterm election with the Republicans out of power, you would expect high Democratic turnout. You would expect maybe higher Democratic turnout. I think that there is an explanation for that, which is that nationally, the Democrats' brand is very, very poor. The Democratic Party is still less popular than the Republican Party, even though they're the party out of power. And so I think that this election was kind of lost by the Republicans on candidate quality and candidate choice more than it was won by the Democrats, really.
Do Republicans have to be concerned here, though? Because, Ross, you know how these things can take on a life of their own and momentum can build more momentum. Do they have a right to be concerned here if, you know, the core Democratic base didn't really show up in huge numbers here, but now you've got this huge, you know, all these big headlines, this banner win for Democrats here in Texas. And as we started off talking about, this party has been demoralized here in this state for decades now. Is this something that could energize that base going into November? Is that something, is that why we're seeing, you know, big time Republicans coming out saying, hey, guys, red flag, we need to, you know, up the game. We're going to have to work harder than ever here.
I think Republicans should be very concerned by this election, not so much because of the potential of the Democratic base being energized as because of what it means about the way independent voters are going. Because the thing is, like, we have seen this movie before when it comes to Democratic mobilization in Texas. Ever since Battleground Texas in 2010 and Wendy Davis, people have been saying they're going to flip the state blue. And yeah, they've brought in outside money. They have run aggressive campaigns to little effect. And I will say they have maximized the turnout of their base. The problem is their base just has a cap and a limit in the state, and it isn't necessarily getting bigger. Now, what we have to worry about from this election, Republicans have to worry about from this election, is independents. We're in an environment, if you drill down into the precinct level voting results here, where you have areas where pretty much every independent and maybe as many as in some places, a quarter of the Republicans were voting for a Democrat. That is the way the Democrats can win against the Republicans in the state, is by just achieving that kind of massive win among the independent voters and peeling off some Republicans. And so that happened in this Senate district under very adverse circumstances that had to do with sort of the selection of the candidate in this special election runoff. Republicans need to be very careful not to duplicate those mistakes when it comes to the quality of their candidates and their outreach to independent voters in the fall.
Let's talk back on SD9 to zoom back here just for a second. You mentioned that a quarter of the Republicans in this district showed up to vote for a Democrat. Did the fundamentals change at all for Lee Wamsgans going into the November general election?
I think they do. I think that we do have reason to think that the independent voters who showed up for this special election runoff tend to be the people who already skewed a little Democratic. So a lot of the Democratic leaning voters who don't participate in our primary elections showed up well, whereas many of the Republican leaning independents, the Republicans who vote in the general election in the fall but not in the primary elections, some of them had come out in the first round. Some of them probably had supported Wamsgans' Republican opponent, John Huffman, in the first round. And a lot of those folks didn't show up. They will almost certainly show up in the fall. So the prospects look much better for her for the fall. I'm sure that, you know, she and her team are not taking anything for granted, you know, nor are any of the other Republican strategists in the state. But I think the prospect is better for the fall. The main concern is that, you know, if we could have a seat swing, never mind the runoff, but even just looking at the first round, if you have a seat that was Trump plus 17, go to being essentially R plus 2 in a low turnout environment. That means that a bunch of seats that were thought to be previously safe are very much in play. And I know that everyone around the state right now is recalculating all their numbers and trying to figure out, okay, where is the front line really?
Yeah, well, where is it now? Which seats are in play, do you think, Ross?
Yeah, well, there are a lot. You can look at it by Trump numbers, but it's not quite as simple as that. Because, again, I don't think this was an anti-Trump mandate in this election. One of the big questions everyone will be asking is to what extent this is something that will affect the suburban seats in DFW and the Austin area, and to what extent will touch South Texas. A lot of our redrawn congressional seats and new state Senate and state House seats are in South Texas. Mm-hmm. And so the million-dollar question that this election doesn't really bear on, to, in my mind, is to what extent has the shift in opinion at the national level affected the Hispanic vote, but more specifically, the South Texas Tejano vote, which sometimes moves in a way that's distinct from the Hispanic vote. So that is really one of the questions that's going to be most important in determining how broad the range of new seats is that's in play, is whether there's damage being done to Republican brand in South Texas.
Yeah, Ross, you know, there's been a lot of talk since Texas redrew the maps last year, that controversial redrawing. And some have wondered, would that, you know, so-called, you know, gerrymander become a dummymander? That's what they call it when it backfires on you. Some of those districts had, you know, if you looked at them in 2024 numbers, they were, you know, they would have gone Republican, but by less than what this Senate district went
sure.
for. So have you looked at those specific districts that Republicans carved out? And they had to pull Republican voters from nearby districts to carve out those districts. Have they left themselves vulnerable in your estimation going into November, considering, you know, what we've seen here? And again, this is just one data point, obviously, and it's kind of an outlier. It's a, you know, runoff and a special election. But, you know, when you look at this, what do you see?
We've begun to analyze it, and I think that this district will carry over, its results will carry over to other districts that are very similar. But this district also does have certain characteristics that won't carry over to all the congressional and Senate districts. The number of working class voters, the presence of a sort of somewhat more moderate Republican constituency in the city of Fort Worth, the geographical division and disparity of the district, the absence of a large Hispanic population. A lot of these things are characteristics are ones that are not present in other districts. And so there's going to be a lot of variation how this carries over. I can tell you that no one in the Texas GOP right now is going to be sitting on their laurels. You know, everyone is going to be looking very carefully at all these seats to ensure we have an accurate understanding of where the party is most in danger. I mean, people talk about gerrymandering. I wouldn't say like a dumb mander so much as a risky mander. I mean, it was a bet that the president took to increase, you know, his sort of share in Congress to try to ensure that he has a congressional majority for as long as possible and retains it. And then the question is whether that calculation ultimately proves to be a prudent one. I don't think that it's been proven yet to be an imprudent one. I think it could be the case these seats could be held. But I think the president has to be thinking, his team have to be thinking now about what they can do to hedge their bets. And that's why I think one of the most interesting outcomes and impacts of this special election may in fact have to do with a post that the president made the day after the election on Sunday, when he announced on Truth Social that he might be reconsidering endorsing in the U.S. Senate race as a result of his special election. And that, I think, is a sign that he and then those close to him are starting to think more, a little more conservatively about Texas and think like, okay, what can I do to avoid losses here? And if that means the president endorsing Senator Cornyn in free election, that would have consequences that would go all up and down the ballot in both the primary and the general.
And you think that's what he's thinking?
I think that if he's saying he's reconsidering means considering endorsing Cornyn. I don't think he means he's considering endorsing Attorney General Paxton. He values loyalty, and Paxton has been a strong ally of his and a strong fighter for his brand. But does he value loyalty to the point of losing a U.S. Senate seat in the general election? I think that's the question that he and his team are asking themselves now.
Wow. 9 months out to the general election here. Last question for you. What are you watching for? What should we be watching for as far as strategy goes from Lee Wobbegon in Senate District 9 and these other, you know, potentially close districts across the state?
I think we should be watching for how candidates match up with their district and how they're communicating to independent voters. It all has a lot to do with what issues you emphasize and how you show that you really are of the district and care about the district. That is, you know, President Trump gets a lot of flack from a lot of people in different quarters of both sides of the aisle. But one of the ways in which he was so successful at expanding the Republican base in Texas and around the country was by listening to people and to what concerns were really on their mind. Some of the concerns that are top of mind for his administration, like illegal immigration and crime, remain highly prevalent in the top of mind of people. Other issues as well, like affordability and in Texas, property taxes are extraordinarily important to all voters. And so I think that if we see intense message discipline from the Republicans about what they're focused on and how their candidates are relating to their districts, that's going to be the most important sort of factor to watch for moving into the fall.
Well, you know, when you posted this, you sort of lit social media on fire this week, Ross, when you were saying that Republicans lost this, you know, not because of this overwhelming Democratic turnout. They lost it because they didn't persuade their own voters and they didn't persuade independents to go their way here. And I saw a bunch of comments on there. First of all, a lot of people don't know how you even got the data because they're like, you know, that's not public, whatever. But, you know, there is public, you know, data as far as people who register for primaries and so forth. And you went back and you really did the work to drill down into it. I'm curious what you've been hearing since then, because you're a plugged in guy. You're connected. What are you hearing from, you know, well-placed Republicans out there about your analysis here? And the other thing I would ask is, what are they doing now as far as independents are concerned? Because it seems like that's the focus group that everybody wants to hear from.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, right now the reaction to my analysis, I think, has been, I just sort of said what a lot of people were already thinking. I mean, everyone knows that we need to appeal to independents, that we need to focus on the issues that matter, not just to a certain segment of our base, but to all the voters who will be really the decisive factor in these close elections in the fall. I think that everyone was surprised, as I was, to discover that this election wasn't about turnout, that it was really about persuasion, and to see that so many independents and some Republicans could vote against us on the basis of issues. This is something that we kind of rediscover, I think, every midterm election, in that the presidential elections just get so partisan. And I think that strategists sometimes run the risk of forgetting that voters are free human beings who can make a choice about who they're going to vote for. And just because I voted Republican in all the last, you know, four or five Republican primaries doesn't mean that I won't pull a ballot for a Democrat at the end of the day. So I think in a way it's just, it's a wake up call for Republicans to really listen again to what matters to independents. And I'm already seeing that right now in certain terms of how people, Republican strategists, are approaching these elections, how they're thinking again about what issues they need to emphasize. And also just like how moderate or how modest they're being about what districts they're thinking about protecting. They may have to make the case for their Republican brand in some places where we thought the case had already been made. But I think there's a will to do that in Texas. And I think that this election should be a warning bell. I think it's one that's been heard. And I think that we'll see changes sort of in the GOP response to this in Texas and probably around the nation as well.
Can't wait to see those changes. And, you know, Ross, thanks for pulling the curtain back on what really happened here. I know a lot of people are curious about that. I never thought the senator-elect now had a shot. And I think a lot of folks sitting in my seat probably thought the same thing, considering the history of that district. But you really brought it home for us. We appreciate that. And I know we'll be talking to you the next 9 months as we head into November.
Thank you, Jason. I look forward to it.
Ross, thank you so much. This is very insightful. Really appreciate it.
That's interesting to pull the curtain back on this and really digest the numbers, because most people don't do that. They try to pull stuff out of, you know, this issue, this candidate, that candidate. It is a wake-up call, totally, to Republicans.
You know, what I find interesting in this, and this is a guy who is plugged in with GOP operations, and he's, you know, been in campaigns or, you know, analyzed campaigns, and I think it's interesting that he's saying not only are they going to be looking at this district, this is going to be something that Republicans statewide are focusing on as they go through and look at district by district to see where they might be vulnerable. And you can bet on the other side of that, Democrats are taking this same data and going, okay, which district by district might we have a chance now that we didn't know we had? And then he went further than that and said, nationally, Republicans are going to be applying this and looking at this. This is a guy who's on the inside and who knows how these things work. And nationally, he thinks that because of what happened in little SD9 in Texas, these parties are getting shaken by this. And they're going back and going, wait a minute, we thought we knew what was going on. Let's go make sure that we know what's going on.
We've talked about it in this podcast. We've talked about it behind the scenes. At the end of the day, for as much hot air as on the right, as much hot air as on the left, it's the people in the middle that decide every single election. In this state, they normally shift to the right. They lean to the right. The independents do. But the independents decide every election. And, of course, this is more proof of that. You mentioned, you know, Republicans, you know, dissecting this and taking it apart. Democrats totally doing the same thing, too. And one of the questions I asked Taylor Rimet here, the state senator-elect, is whether other Democrats running right now can replicate what he did. Pretty interesting conversation about that and his priorities. Take a listen.
Senator-elect, it's good to see you here. Congratulations on the win as well. Let's start out and kind of lay the groundwork for our viewers here. You are a machinist, a union president, an Air Force veteran who still talks like a shop floor guy, not necessarily a polished politician. But how much of your win do you credit to your actual policies versus identity politics and people being able to relate to you?
Well, I still talk like a guy on the shop floor because I am. And being that I'm going from the shop floor to the Senate floor, I'm going to carry those issues of working people with me. So it's not just about my background, but it's also about the stuff that I live daily about these affordability issues, lowering costs that need to be championed.
And what do you, people are trying to dissect this win and say, you know, wow, what did you do there that other Democrats across the state can try to replicate? What do you think that your key to success was?
I think the key is to have your own identity and your own really tailored message to the constituents in the area you're at, being hyper local. I mean, you know, I'm a Democrat, but I'm a Texan first. And I'm before that, I was an Air Force veteran and I served as a union leader. This is why I got a team that all lives right here. So whenever I say hyper local, I mean it. I got talent from Tarrant County. Our vendors are Texas based. I based this campaign on Texas. That was a huge advantage. So I really can't speak to other Democrats. I can only say that me as a Texan and as a hardworking man, I know that hard work paid off because I stayed local. I stayed on message. I didn't focus on the campaign of outrage or culture wars. I stuck to working Texas issues, public education, and lowering taxes like property tax and, lowering costs in general.
Did you have a campaign consultant that you worked with?
No campaign consultant. I didn't get any out-of-state campaign consultant. I got a campaign manager based here in Tarrant County.
I read that you grew up as a Republican in a blue-collar family. Is your family still Republican?
They are. Yeah. We don't agree on everything, but I mean, we find what we can agree on. That's, again, my campaign is more based in unity. Because we won't agree on everything. No one does. But if we find what we can agree on, I mean, if you don't mind, it's really about community, right? And it doesn't matter if you're Republican or a Democrat. We all live in this community. We all live in Senate District 9. I remember the first community I recognized was whenever I was a young kid. My mom was did hair and nails at a salon local. And if I wasn't at school, I'd be in that salon. And I saw how everyone was friendly. Didn't really talk about politics. They just asked how you were doing. And, they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up.
What'd you tell them?
Well, I was obsessed with dinosaurs, but I think what I wanted to be was a firefighter.
Okay. All right. you were successful in getting not only independents in this state that leaned to the right, but getting Republicans to cross over and vote for you. Was that simply because of your message, do you think?
It very well could be. I would say building trust with all folks in the Senate district, regardless of party lines, is key to winning. Because when you are trying to be a leader and a servant, you have to show up and talk about issues that affect both sides. That's critical. We showed up where a lot of Democrats wouldn't go. And I think that's important to note as well. The thing is you have to build bridges. You have to show respect to everyone and, you know, build that trust.
Why not get into social issues, identity politics? I mean, fear sells, and both parties know that very well. Why not take that avenue at all?
I have no doubt that it sells. But what I'm selling is solutions. And I have no business getting into the nitty-gritty of these things that distract from whatever. Because here's the thing. First off, it's not my nature. Not how my parents raised me. I swore that I would focus on the issues. And when I'm on a campaign trail and I have people telling me, coming up to me saying, there's people deciding between medicine and rent or medicine and food. That's what's really hurting us here. People are already afraid. Things aren't getting any better. People are not having the same buying power. We're having affordability issues. And so why would I betray the people that elected me by not sticking to my message whenever, you know, that's what they elected me for? They don't want the campaigns of outrage. I wanted my campaign to be a place of resolve and be someone people can count on.
This special election you won will fulfill the rest of Kelly Hancock's term. So it goes until next January. And then you have to run again in November for the full 4-year term. You'll face Lee Wamsgana again on the ballot, but you have less than a year, 9 months until that actually happens. You're going to be a target now for Republicans. Are you going to need to go out and get big money to get behind you?
Well, I already was a target, and I've already been outspent in 2 elections, and I won both of those. They've spent millions against me, and they'll continue to spend millions against me, but they will never outwork me. That's something I want to make clear. It's hard work. Like the people who clock in early, leave late every single day, and keep the state running, I want to match their energy because I want to work as hard or harder than them. And in this campaign, that's what we're doing. I mean, I think they're also probably worried because I'm talking about campaign finance reform. Because no billionaire should be able to send millions of dollars to a candidate to fund an election. To me, that's not right. I think that grassroots and organic organizing and community outreach is the way you should win a campaign. That's how I won mine, and that's how I'm going to win it again in November.
Will your campaign change at all between now and November, the campaign you won with?
I certainly don't plan on changing what's working. So, no.
Why change it, right? Your campaign made it a point to knock on 30,000 doors. That was imperative, I read, to you and to your staff as well, and the success that came from. Is that right?
That's 100% correct.
A couple last questions here. Texas Democrats want to replicate your win in districts all across the state. Can they do that? Is this win transferable at all?
I can only speak to my district and what I did. I would say that, do they want to do the work? Because if they do, of course there's a chance. They have the same opportunity I did. People told me all the time, it couldn't be done, you can't do it. And I said, well, my issues the issues that I'm championing are focused on everyone. And if I can build that trust, and it's by doing the work, I knew I could do this. And they can too, if they're willing to do the work.
When you've heard from other Democratic officials over the past few recent days, what have they wanted to know from you?
Do you mind repeating that?
Yeah, sure. I'm sure you've heard from plenty of Democratic officials over the past few days. What have they primarily been asking?
Well, The same question you're asking me, if I'm being honest, and I gave them the exact same answer.
Just on how they can take your take lessons learned from your district.
Correct. And there's no secrets here. I'm saying it right here on television. I've been saying it, and there's no secret sauce. That you got to do the work.
Well, what else can you think of that we haven't asked you, that people have asked you, the constituents have asked you, or that you want to point out? What else is out there?
Well, I would say my biggest point of contention out here is these public schools that are under attack here in Texas. The vouchers are not going to work. They haven't even been fully rolled out yet, and we are going to face the repercussions of it when it is. The Keller ISD split was a bad, bad political move, and we're going to see public schools continuing to be under attack. And again, I have no problem with setting high standards for our public schools. We should. But we got to make sure that they get the funding to meet those standards. Otherwise, it's sabotage. And the vouchers are going to do some of that and maybe more. We have to make sure that we end the school vouchers. I don't believe we should be sending public money to private institutions with little to no oversight. This is worrisome for me. We need to keep local control of schools, our public schools, locally, because public schools have much better standards than the private schools. So I just want to clarify, it is not about school choice. It's about public schools needing to be as great as they should be and attract the best talent.
Let me ask you one more question about that.
Sure.
We just saw some new number. We just saw some brand new numbers from the comptroller's office, the person you succeeded here, Kelly Hancock. And he says in the first 36 hours or so of school vouchers going live for parents to apply, there have been 46,000 people sign up. Legislature only set aside enough money for 100,000 people to sign up. There seems like there's a lot of interest in this in the early hours here. Are Democrats wrong on this issue?
Well, I'd be more curious who is actually signing up. That's the question we should ask. Are they wealthy families that are already having their kids in private schools and charter schools? We need to find out. We need to look into this.
Senator-elect, it's good to see you. Congratulations again.
Thank you so much for having me.